Here it comes. The latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green. And even though we are going to put the spotlight on the Southwest, there's been a big expansion with our guest here because she's coast to coast. And we have two in-studio guests joining me tonight. Thanks for joining me. It's all about Greece. As in turning cooking oil into grease and other feedstock into biodiesel, I'm thrilled to have in studio with me Stacy Spink, the president of EDG, which stands for Environmental Development Group. And joining her is Luis Felix, who is the engineer and the plant manager for EDG. And even though I want Stacy to talk about it's all about the grease, because that I just like saying that, so it's my show, I get to say that a lot. I need you to tell us a little bit about what EDG is, and then we're going to talk a lot about the program that you've had that's successful in Tucson and growing Enjoy Dining Green. I call it the other EDG, with the cutest car on the planet, maybe. Seriously.
The smart car. Well, okay, thank you, Mrs. Green, so for having us this evening. EDG is a facilities maintenance company, and we specialize in big box retail, commercial sites, office locations. Basically, we do everything from the counter to the curb. So if a big box retailer wants to remodel a store or needs landscaping, concrete work, plumbing, those are the types of things that we do. So basically, when we started Environmental Development Group, we were facilities maintenance, but as we started branching out into other parts of the country, we had customers coming to us with sustainable ideas that they really wanted to take action on. And we helped them build some of these programs. So that was the evolution of EDG going into EDG Fuels and creating the coalition Enjoy Dining Green.
And if you don't know the importance of recycling your grease, by the end of the show, you will. I've become obsessed with it. Seriously, nothing goes down the drain in the Mr. and Mrs. Greenhouse. Trust me, nothing that even is a remote facsimile of grease. And Luis, why don't you tell us a little bit about what is your role at EDG?
I was pretty much involved in everything regarding the biodiesel plant from the pretty much the conception stages towards the development and the construction of the plant, and also the operation, the maintenance, and the quality control of the product.
And we'll get into that a little bit later in the show, but it's not a simple process. It's not an inexpensive process either. I mean, you have standards that you have to comply with. What was your background? I'm very curious about that.
Chemical engineering. Chemical engineering.
Okay.
And it has to, the product definitely has to comply with the American Society for Testing and Material Standards. And it is just one standard, but that standard has several tests that the product actually has to pass in order to comply with the full standard. Within those, it's a lot of technicalities, methanol content, glycerol content.
There's a lot of things you have to look for and make sure that they aren't in there and make sure that they get refined out.
Yes, in order to sell it as, you know, a certified product, because it can be, you can actually sell it sell it as a non-spec product, but it loses its value at that point. I mean, not all the value, but just reaching to that standard.
Okay, so since we're going to try to focus, and we all know that that's challenging, that's why I have good notes, to talk about the grease that is massively used by restaurants, and that is one of the reasons for your coalition, the Enjoy Dining Green concept. And do you actually go out and collect the grease from restaurants?
Yes, we do. And we, in the Tucson area where I'm based and Luis is based, we collect a small amount of yellow grease here, but, you know, throughout the nation, tens of thousands of gallons that we bring back to Tucson and have manufactured into biodiesel. So you know, that's really our mission, is to gain more ground in the regions that we're in. We have 4 offices, 2 in California, 1 in Tucson, and 1 in Silver City, New Mexico. And we want to reach out to those areas and basically educate people about what's happening with the grease, and basically build our program.
Now, I know there are standards for what I'm beginning to understand is brown grease. So when you are in a restaurant or in your house even, well, let's just say, keep it to restaurants. When you rinse the plates off, if it had gravy, meatloaf gravy, or any kind of grease on it, if you had bacon and eggs, and you rinse it down the drain, that becomes a brown grease.
Well, let me put it this way. If it's a restaurant, most of the sinks are going to be leading towards the grease interceptor. Not necessarily the dishwashing
okay,
sink,
okay.
But the meat, wherever they prep the food,
okay.
Wherever they probably pour the grease from the bacon, like you said, most of those sinks are actually going towards the grease interceptor first, which then goes to the sewer. The rest of the sinks, they actually just go directly towards the sewer because they're supposed not to have any potential. They don't have any potential to clog any pipes.
Just kind of guessing they don't always do that.
No. Some smaller operations will have traps,
mm-hmm. Right?
20 to 50 gallon traps underneath sinks if they don't have an interceptor. And some malls that we service, you know, the huge food courts, they will have 1 interceptor for the 10, 20 restaurants in the mall.
Mm-hmm. And how many gallons would a collector be then for a big one? I mean, that's a lot.
It can range.
Every day?
Well, it depends, because the interceptors have both water and grease. And just top of my head, a grease interceptor can be sized to from 1,500 gallons to 3,500 gallons. Whenever one of our trucks comes to service those grease interceptors, what they're getting out of that, let's say, 1,500 gallon tank, it's 1,000 gallons. And out of those 1,000 gallons, probably 200 gallons are grease, and the 80% is water and solids at the bottom.
Okay.
So we come into another process of trying to separate all the water out of that grease, the solids out of that grease, and then refine that 200 gallons. So, I mean, it gets labor intensive to try and clean all that.
It's beyond my comprehension. Seriously. I mean, it's massive. And when you think about the massive consumption with restaurants and eating out, it boggles the mind. And I always then go to the impact on the environment, because that's growing. I mean, just count on any street in Tucson the number of fast food restaurants.
Oh, yes.
It's kind of like really sad. So let's talk about the program. See, I told you I can just like hyper focus. So Enjoy Dining Green. Restaurants are your primary market. There has been growth. You said off air, it used to be 50 gallons. Now it's up to 1,600. 50
gallons about 2 years ago. Now we're up to 1,600.
But we'd like to see 16 to 20,000, a lot more, right?
And our projection at the very beginning was that, you know, Tucson had about 40,000 gallons of yellow grease. That was our projection.
How 40,000 gallons?
Of yellow grease, used cooking oil. And that
a day?
A month. I'm sorry.
Okay, a month.
That was our projection. And we were including restaurants in that. But, you know, there's lots of resorts, hotels here that have food service, golf courses. You know, the list is possibly endless of all the places that we could collect from. People don't even know sometimes that, you know, they can actually, instead of just washing it down the drain or putting it in an interceptor, that somebody will collect it. And higher volumes, we do pay for the yellow grease. So
if you don't pay them, is it free to collect it, or do you charge them to collect it?
Free to collect. We bring a container to them, that has the Enjoy Dining Green symbol on it. Participants get the certificate. They're mentioned on promotions that we do a couple of times a year. We have events where we will come to their store. Or their restaurant.
You have the grease eating machine. That's one of my favorite things. It's like one of my highest hits on YouTube is that Mrs. Green dumps the bacon grease.
Oh, that's
seriously
true. Yes.
I mean it. I was like, oh my gosh. And I, of course, made up how much of that bacon grease was mine, because it is one of my vices. So what are some of the clients in Tucson? I'm very curious about why it would not grow more. If you collect it for free, a lot more people are getting on board about environmental consciousness. I mean, it's accelerating at a rapid pace. What are some of the partners that you do have here in Tucson that are on board that you'd like to like give a shout out and a high five
JW
to?
JW Marriott, that's probably one of our
awesome.
Biggest
they
customers.
They are so sustainable.
Acacia Restaurant.
Love Albert and Leah, okay.
Reed Park Zoo.
Yay!
Many of the restaurants on 4th Avenue, that was really where we started. And basically, you know, we haven't promoted or marketed this at all. It's grown by word of mouth.
So it's kind of viral, as we say, in the radio business.
Exactly.
Okay, so that's an unbelievable... Why would a restaurant not do it? Why would they not do it? Are there any standards that they're forced to comply with?
I would say probably about 50% of the restaurants are.
They are.
We do have competitors out there.
Oh, we're not
going to
mention them.
No, but
not on the show.
The good thing about, you know, our operation is what we collect stays here in Tucson, stays here in Arizona. A lot of these people, the big operations that are in Phoenix, they're collecting it and sending it everywhere else. But
and
Arizona.
Shipping it probably, yeah. Or yeah. Driving it long distances.
So we try to use it in the markets that we collect. So that's one of the advantages of going with the Enjoy Dining Green program.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the processing, because that totally fascinates me. So there is a misconception, and again, we talked off air. I always want to tape our off air conversations because they're fascinating to me too. But Mr. Green said something about people say, oh yeah, you're using diesel. Does your car smell like French fries? That's such a misconception. You cannot just figure that you have a diesel car, different from biodiesel, and put any, even if you filtered it somewhat, put your oil in your car. That's not how it works. It's such an oversimplification. And I think people are eager to learn. So Louise, can you talk a little bit about the process of, if you have a car now, like I do, I've got that Jetta, mm-hmm. my diesel, which just gets great mileage. It's diesel that you go up to the pump and get. What would happen if I started putting biodiesel in it? What do we have to look at in terms of challenges for the consumer?
Challenges for the consumer, like I was telling you, as long as the car was manufactured after year 2000,
okay.
There's not going to be any issues. And the only issue was with any car or truck manufactured before 2000, some of the gaskets and some of the hoses were made with rubber, and biodiesel eats the rubber really easy. So
an engineer. Do you know why?
It's just the nature of the biodiesel. I mean,
what
we
it's
use
made
it,
of.
Yeah, it's how it reacts. It's just a reaction it has with certain plastics.
Chemical engineering answer. Good for you. It's chemicals. Okay.
But anyway, apart from that, the only issue is that, like I was telling you before, that if you've been running your diesel engine, whether it's a car or a truck with regular diesel, you need to, if you're going to switch to biodiesel, you need to step it up little by little, because regular diesel still has paraffins and some waxes that get stuck in the over time in the tank. So you need to remove them little by little with sequential increments of biodiesel in your fuel. Because if you put just 100% biodiesel, it's going to strip all those waxes and it's going to plug your injectors. But other than that, the car...
Now, is that for cars that were built before 2000 and now...
Any car.
Okay, so you can't just flip a switch.
Exactly,
okay, that's
exactly.
Good to know, too.
But if you have a new car or a new truck that it's made... that it's a diesel engine, then you can put biodiesel from the get-go, and it's going to run perfectly.
So what about the cost factor in terms of, you know, diesel? I have a diesel engine. It was much more expensive than regular gas. It's come down significantly. It's about the same now as gasoline. I get so many miles per gallon that it really offsets it all day long. But what about the cost factor? Like is it the equivalent of would I buy a gallon of biodiesel to put in my car? What is the cost factor? Is it cost prohibitive at this point? Is it volume that's going to get us there?
On a large scale, it doesn't make that much of a difference. It's more, you know, geared towards the impact, towards the environment. And there are, you know, some of the fleet sales that we do. Companies, of course, are getting tax incentives from the government to use that type of fuel. So that's really where the difference is. The last I checked, sometimes it'll be 3 to 5 cents. So, I mean, that can make a difference if you're buying, you know, if you look
right,
at it per
right.
year
for
to the individual.
Too, especially. Right,
yes.
Right. Okay.
And it also depends on what the price of diesel is at the moment.
What drives that? Like, all of a sudden, the price of diesel went down so much, and it used to be the cheapest thing you could buy. Diesel was always cheaper than gasoline. So why wasn't everybody using diesel? Because it was cheaper. So, yeah, I don't know.
I wouldn't be able to.
Availability.
Yeah. Availability. Availability.
You know, when you go to the gas pump, you know, you'll have one pump that's basically diesel. You know, sometimes you have to look for a gas station. You'll drive to three before you'll find something, you know.
Just happened to us in San Diego. Yeah. There are more here. We had to drive and pull out of a couple of gas stations when we were in San Diego because they didn't have diesel. Let's just go, I like to call it in the dream machine a little bit. Luis, when you were talking about, you know, 10%, 20%. So I think about me, mm-hmm. and I am trying every way that I can to live more consciously and will go out of my way to do things, even if inconvenient, if it's going to be for the greater good of the environment, because I do have a crystal ball about mm-hmm. that, and we better hurry up. Like, seriously, we all better get on board. What would I do if I wanted to put some biodiesel? Would I have to come to EDG and put some biodiesel in the pump? Is it something that you can get by the gallon? How would I make the transition without having to go to get a little bit, like 10 to 20% or of the gallons, and then go fill it up with the rest of diesel? Do you see what I'm saying?
You can do that, but I mean, it's better if you already have the mixture ready, because usually how it works at the pump is that it's mixed right there on the pump. So right. Let's say when you go to a place that actually sells biodiesel or ethanol or any other type of renewable fuel, well, only those two that I know, but they have like 5% B5 or B10 or B20, and you just grab the pump and when you press the button for B5, you have 5% biodiesel and 95% petrol diesel. Okay. So you're already getting the mixture right there. It will be kind of difficult. I mean, not difficult, but
so that's you, not the
you'll
way
have
it happens.
To be like wing it on your tank if you want to put like, okay, let's $10 of diesel and then $10 of biodiesel. I mean, it's feasible too. It's just for that purpose, if you've been already running on just diesel and you want to go on increments, I mean, you can. I think it's easier just to go to the 5 pump, the 10 pump, and the 20 pump afterwards, instead of like the $2, the $4, and then the
right, 10. Right, right. That's right. Now let's talk a little bit about once you pick up the grease. Okay, we've got the grease, and it comes to the processing portion of it. What happens? What do you have to do? What are some of these standards to clean it out, to get it ready to put in a car?
The oil?
Yeah, the oil.
The yellow grease.
Just the yellow grease.
The refining process.
That we lovingly refer to as the yellow grease, not the brown grease.
Well, but you're talking about the yellow grease into the
when you pick it up from the restaurants and then take it back.
It comes to EDG Fuels. It comes to EDG processes. We call it a refine it.
Yeah, we centrifuge the oil to take away all the solids. And we heat it up to get all the water that we can out. Because we, in order for us to produce biodiesel with the oil, we need to have an oil that is pretty much free of water, free of solids that will interfere with the chemical reaction.
All of which would ruin your engine, right?
Yeah, and the lowest amount of free fatty acids possible. And the free fatty acids are just stuff that the oil can, it's molecules that will also interfere with the reaction and produce, will create soaps instead of biodiesel, and we don't want soaps.
Well, and just to stop you, we do know before we start processing the yellow grease what the quality is,
what the amount is,
and what the FFA is, so we would know before the process starts exactly what we're starting with.
Literally a chemical test that you do with the oil.
Right.
When
we sample
grease,
everything.
Yellow grease.
Yes.
Okay.
We do it in the lab. We do what is called a titration to know exactly what the percent of free fatty acids is.
And what would dictate that? Like in a restaurant, you don't have to pick on any restaurants. I mean, I'm so glad the chemical engineer is here.
We were talking about it yesterday or the other day. There's some places that we pick up from that just do a lot of rotisserie chicken, and that is really top of the line, grade A yellow grease.
Mm-hmm. So you like that?
Yes, we love that.
You love that because there's not as much of the process taken by cleaning it.
Exactly.
So
think
that's
of how
why
many they sell of those at Costco. Not that I want to do a free advertising, but those rotisserie chickens fly out of there. Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly. I mean, every place, Fry's, I mean,
Safeway, Rincon Market.
I mean
just,
are we going
right. to... And then on the other side of the spectrum, you know, you have restaurants, you know, that are producing all kinds of different foods, not just French fries, but everything goes into that same container. So you can imagine, I mean, sometimes we get calls and say, there's a gum wrapper in here. So that's those things all have to be strained and taken out. So
Okay. So you know before you start. So then it goes into the process and then it's tested after that. After you, when you meet the standards, you have
to... just before going into the process.
Okay.
I need to know that because I need to know whether... how much trouble is that oil going to cause into my line, into my production line.
And we talked a little bit about freezing. Not that we have to worry about that here in good old Tucson, which is hot as the inside of hell this week. But what about, it does get cold here. I remember
There is a standard between the within the ASTM certification, and that's cold soak filtration. And that makes sure that the biodiesel is good for cold environments, because in places like South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, if you're using biodiesel, that's gonna get clogged up in your tank, and it's not even gonna try and reach to the engine. It's just gonna stay there. So and that depends on several factors. It depends on the oil you're doing your biodiesel of, on the type of additives that you're putting into your biodiesel after it's done. It depends on a lot of variables.
And there's a lot of things besides cooking oil, correct me if I'm wrong, that besides, you know, French fry grease, which is what people know it as, or yellow grease, that can be turned into biodiesel.
Yes, actually.
Many, many, many things.
Yes, you can use, like we said, chicken fat. You can use lard to do it. You can use virgin oils, which they make beautiful biodiesel, by the way, and beautiful byproduct, too.
What about like cottonseed oil and flaxseed oil, the byproducts of those? Can you use those?
Yes. The byproduct of the transesterification reaction, which is the reaction used to make biodiesel, it gives the methyl ester, which is the main part of the biodiesel, which is around between 80 and 90%, and then the byproduct, which is 10 to 20% glycerin, and that glycerin, it's the quality is gonna depend on the feedstock or the oil that you're using. If you're using a virgin oil, it's gonna yield very good glycerin. But if you're using waste vegetable oil, then you're gonna have raw very more rustic glycerin that you will probably have to clean in order to sell it somewhere else.
So, Stace, you're an entrepreneur for sure. I mean, you are. Just own it, yes it, celebrate it. You are such an entrepreneur. And it's wonderful. And a female entrepreneur, a leader in our community, you have really, the company is strongly growing. You have wonderful contracts across the country with places like Walmart to do a really huge commitment to the environment is what I see. In terms of your green crystal ball, where do you see it going with biodiesel? Like I told you that I interviewed this woman, Kelly King, from Pacific Biodiesel, and the process is slow. One of the things that she brought up, which like, you know, makes me sick. I won't be crass on the air, but she said one of the big obstacles is there's such heavy subsidies for oil, like oil. And I'm like, really? That's great. Because Shell and Chevron need it. But not so much for the biodiesel and the development of that, which to me truly create what I call green jobs, because you have somebody who has to pick it up. You have to have somebody to help process it. You have to have somebody with the distribution at the tanks. It is truly a process that would create sustainable jobs, not just like putting solar on a roof, which I'm fully in favor of. But you see the difference. It's a one-time deal. Where do you see it going?
Well, I think not just talking about biodiesel, but really about, you know, when you're saying a crystal ball, is that we need to look at every resource as being renewable. Our idea started, you know, with yellow grease, moved into, you know, a biodiesel plant that became EDG Fuels. But really, when you look at the whole process, and because I'm not a chemical engineer and, you know, I'm a manager and a, you know, the president of the company that has the vision, I'm just saying that really everything that we touch, whether it's, you know, concrete or brown grease or yellow grease or, you know, lumber, it's like there's somebody out there that uses it in another and the next step. And that's really what I'm looking at. I mean, Luis talked about the glycerin as a byproduct of the biodiesel production. You know, that's even has a market for it. And that's really what we need to look at to move to the next level. So that's what I see the crystal ball as, you know, people realizing that, you know, it's great. You know, yes, we want to renew all of our resources, but on the other side, you know that the economy drives money and the economy drives everything.
Truly.
Once people know that there's value in that, everybody's going to jump on the bandwagon.
And there are a lot of studies coming out now, more and more and more, about what is a consumer willing to do to make a greener choice. And sometimes it is spend more money. More and more, like in the local food industry, it's one of the fastest growing. It gives me the most hope of anything I see, the growth of organic farms and the growth of farmers markets. People are catching on and realizing that our body's a machine and, you know, what you put in really matters. So we have, I know you're, it's like we have less than 5 minutes left. So if a, I know, it's like, I wish this was on TV so you could see all of our faces. It's pretty fun. What would...
Really fun.
It is really fun. We have so much fun and the faces. I love looking at all the faces. So that maybe is 2013. We'll have it like bio-fueled... you know, the energy will be produced by biofuel and we'll have it broadcast all over the globe. You never know. Okay. How is the best way to people contact you? Do you have a person at EDG at your HQ that is the EDG contact person other than driving that adorable little car, which people do read and do see and can find you that way?
We have a renewable resource manager. And she is located in our New Mexico office. But I think the easiest way to remember how to get in touch with us is 520-790-EDG1. That's our Tucson number. And you can be connected to Carrie Dalton. And she's our renewable resource manager.
And I think I've spoken to her on the phone once. I was trying to find you. And you were somewhere on the road in the snow. Remember that. It was like, it was a, yeah, you were coming back from.
Who knows from, where I was.
Who knows where she was. Really. It's, I was using my GPS to try and contact you too. Okay. The website for you is EDG.
www.edgroup.us.
Yeah. And I always tell people that they can contact Gina and Mrs. Green's World or info at Mrs. Green's World if they want. Do you have any closing things that you want to tell us? Because to me, I'm not kidding. This is one of the most fascinating topics that I get to talk about in the show. And the reason is everybody I know drives a car. So one of the commonalities, not everybody I know is a vegetarian or is a carnivore, or there are so many things, or they don't all use healthy products.
Everybody drives a car. One better yet, everybody eats food. So everybody eats food.
That's right, reeling and, back the food chain.
Yeah, so back to the food chain. So probably I would guess that everybody has some part in creating yellow grease. So we have 24/7 collection site at our site on Eisenhower in Tucson, 8939 South Eisenhower. So if they want to drop off any of their yellow grease, they can do that there.
And there are events throughout the year, which I'll be promoting because I love to talk about.
One during Thanksgiving. After
biggest one, right. Yeah, after Turkey Day, Turkey Grease Collection Day, which is huge. And think about that. And I love that you said that because I always like a call to action. And one of my other passions is to get restaurants to use biodegradable to-go containers so we don't have to say the S word, styrofoam. And I take my own pretty much. We do. We've gotten into the habit of it. But people can be what I call friendly agitators at their favorite restaurants and ask to see the manager or see the owner and say, I'm just very curious, what do you do with your yellow grease?
Or they can ask them if they're an Enjoy Dining Green partner.
Yes, are you an EDG partner? It's something easy for me to do. And what I love about the people in Mrs. Green's World, they are conscious consumers. And they write to me about things and they ask me how I can help make the change, and I'll put this up on Facebook because it's not just Tucson that we want to change. We want to have a global impact, but now we know what another resource of EDG right here in Tucson, Arizona, and say hello to those crazy people, Chelsea and Sean, for me, if you don't mind. Okay.
Thank you for having us.
Chelsea.
Yeah, it's always
Chelsea, you'll kill me. Chelsea. Don't tell her I said that. Okay. don't forget, Mrs. Green's World can be heard every Saturday at Mrs. Green's World Radio Network right here at noon. Great guest coming up Saturday. Sally Malanga from EcoBella, a new partner of ours. Make it a great green week. And you guys, thank you so much for coming, and thanks for what you do to make our world a better place.
Thank you.